Joining us now is Finn Boylan. Finn is a documentary maker. He's from Wicklow. He's from north side of Bray. And he's making a documentary about the war in Ukraine. You're very welcome, Finn. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Declan. Thanks for having me on.
Give us a bit of background to yourself, first of all. When did you get involved in documentary making?
Well, I started my journey into film probably 5-6 years ago. I only picked up a camera in 2017. But it was all kind of wrapped up in my passion for history and telling stories from, you know, global conflicts around the world. Been kind of glued to geopolitics, history, ethno-religious conflict, and, you know, how it all comes together on the map and how it shapes nation states. And, you know, I'm chronically aware of this growing up in Ireland. You know, our own nation exists as a result or an outcome of conflict. So based on that, I went into a BA in history in UCD and graduated in 2014, and that coincided with the Maidan Revolution, which basically started this war. It didn't start on 24th of February, it started 8 years ago with the Maidan Revolution. And I was glued to that from the beginning, the 93 days of that revolution. It was like watching the nationalist riots in Northern Ireland.
Did I see some documentary about that?
Winter on Fire was the name of that documentary.
Yeah, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, but my documentary is called Forsaken Frontier, if anybody wants to check it out. The trailer's already out on YouTube, Forsaken Frontier. But yeah, I was glued to the Maidan Revolution in 2014, coinciding with my graduation. Almost failed my exams watching it every single day. And I knew then this the long peace that we've enjoyed in Europe is incredibly fragile, and the geopolitical state of Europe, you know, was really at stake at that point. And of course, Crimea was annexed and Donbass war broke out. And that's one of the reasons I called my film Forsaken Frontiers, because in Europe we kind of ignored that. We left it to one side for the last 8 years and forgot about it, you know. We left it forsaken, and Putin tried again, and we're now experiencing
this. Well, let's
go
back to 2014. I mean, was that basically, it's part of Putin's narrative, was that an overthrow of the government? Okay, the guy in charge didn't want anything to do with the EU, wanted closer links with Russia, but was he overthrown?
You could argue that. I mean, based on Ukraine's geography and Europe, there's always going to be a power play, a tug between East and West, and that's just they're just victims of their geography in the end. And I mean, I would agree that every nation state has the right to determine their own foreign policy, but when you go one way or the other, you're going to have interference from your larger neighbours, and it's the same that Ireland experienced. I mean, if we started adopting pro-Russian stances here in a government here, do you think that the Americans or the British wouldn't get involved? It's just a it's just the reality of the world, and based on that revolution in 2014, there was always going to be blowback. And Putin, since the year 2000, had got away with interventions in Syria, in Georgia, in Chechnya, and twice in Chechnya, and he thought we would be apathetic this time when he tried to go for the whole cake. And this is the first time in the last, since Putin's been in power, that the West has really stood up and taken action and said no. And that's one of the reasons also I called the film Forsaken Frontier, because this war is not going to be won on the battlefield of Ukraine alone. It's going to be won in Washington, in Congress in Washington. It's going to be won in Westminster. It's going to be won in the parliaments of Berlin and Paris. And every single shell that's been fired by the Ukrainians is coming from NATO now. So if the apathy that we've experienced among Western populations for the last 8 years returns, or even at times has become hostility because of the amount of refugees that are coming over, exacerbating our own housing crisis and our own social problems here. If that political narrative takes shape within the parliaments of Western countries, Ukraine will fall. And that's one of the reasons. And I kind of anticipated this. I knew it would kind of go that way. And that's kind of what we're experiencing in Ireland right now. A little bit of blowback, certainly with protests. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with them on any. They have points, but the Ukrainians would be the refugees that are coming over now. They're exacerbating on a catalyst for a problem that's existed here since 2008 banking crisis. So it can't be held down to them alone. I mean, one of my stories in my film follows a Ukrainian soldier on the front line in Ukraine in Mykolaiv front, whose family are in Leitrim. And his wife has three kids, all under the age of 12, and they're living in a hotel room in Leitrim, a one-room hotel. And just last week, I got word that he got wounded in Bakhmut, head injury, severe concussion from a thermobaric bomb. So, you know, it's very easy to point the finger at the refugees, but you don't know the story behind all of them. You know, it's when you know, when you get a bit more in depth and, you know, focus specifically on their story on, and on an individual level, you can sympathize, absolutely. But that's not to take away from, you know, the problems people are experiencing here at home. But yeah, that's why I called the film Forsaken Frontier, because if political, social problems here start blowing back against the national governments, then support for Ukraine will fall, military support will fall, and then, of course, eventually the Kyiv government will fall.
Right, okay. Well, that was the answer to my first question about how did you get involved in film. But what is interesting about that, Finn, is that a lot of people that come in and you talk about their work in film, and they come to film for its own sake, or making documentaries for its own sake. So they go to Dunleary College and they learn skills and they get out there and they pick subjects from time to time and do them. You seem to be driven by the story itself, and the vehicle of telling that story was the filmmaking.
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to get out there and, you know, tell the stories from places many cameras wouldn't make it. And yeah, I realized that, sure, nobody reads anymore. I love to write, I love to read, but nobody reads anymore. It's all, you know, clickbait, social media, everything's online now, YouTube. So I realized, you know, if I'm going to actually tell my stories, I need a better medium to do it. So that's why I picked up a camera, and I eventually got into a film school in Germany. I was living in Germany for a number of years and graduated that in 2019, and yeah, just kept going from there.
Us about the film.
About the film. So basically, it's chronicling the Irish experience in Ukraine, and it kind of all started for me on day one. I mean, I've been the only Irish man on the ground with a camera for this length of time from the start. I've spent over nearly 5 months in country from the very beginning on Sunday, March 12th, just gone, was the 1 year anniversary of when I crossed the border into Ukraine. And I was there March, April, May, came back in June, and was out again in October, November, December. And I've seen it all from the battle for Kyiv in March, which the liberation of Bucha, which I was there for on the first day of the liberation, and the war crimes that I documented that will feature in the film. I was there for the start of the Ukrainian counteroffensive in Kherson. And I was also there at the meat grinder that is Bakhmut in Donbass there at Christmas.
Dreadful situation
It's terrible, but the kind of the whole narrative structure of the film is to chronicle the Irish experience in Ukraine and showcase that nothing is stronger than the heart of an Irish volunteer. And there are several Irish characters that have been committed to this since from the beginning. Two ex-Irish soldiers, an ex-Irish firefighter from the Tipperary Fire Service, as well as an Irish mechanic from Kilcool here. And he basically is the start of my journey into Ukraine. On my first day in Ukraine, I was sitting in Lviv Central Square with all my gear, wondering what to do, where to go next. You know, I've just arrived in Ukraine. What avenue do I take? And I pulled a beer out of my bag just to settle the nerves a little bit. And at the time, I didn't know alcohol was illegal. It was banned in the country at the time. So I opened the beer and I started nursing the beer. Halfway through the beer, and all I hear is an Irish accent shout at me, "Hey, boy, press man." And I turn around and it's an Irish accent. And it's a man wearing a flat cap. He goes, "Where'd you get that beer?" Anyway, long story short, his name's Graham Hill. He's from Kilcool. And fellow Wicklow man, instantly connected. And he told me about a bunch of Irish ambulances, 10 Irish ambulances that were being sent from the HSE over to Ukraine to a Ukrainian charity. And he was due to work on the ambulances as a mechanic. So I followed him into the charity, him fixing the ambulances. And then when those were sent off to frontline locations, he wanted to get more involved. And he shadowed two foreign fighters heading to Kyiv to join the battle, to join the Foreign Legion. One was an American Marine and another was a Swedish sniper. So I basically shadowed Graham on the train to Kyiv, and we arrived, I think it was about the 23rd of March. So this is 1 week before Kyiv was liberated, but we didn't know when it was going to happen. The battle was raging. Kyiv was surrounded on three sides. The only avenue in was via a train on the southwest. And I remember it was very comforting to have an Irish voice narrating everything that I was seeing. It kind of settled my nerves a little bit. I mean, we were going into the lion's den, essentially, you know. And I'll never forget when we got off the train Graham was laughing and joking. He's a bit of comic relief in the film. Anyway, we were laughing and joking, having a good time on the train. And then we got off, just the sound of shelling was immense, even though we were 30 kilometers away from the front line in Irpin and Bucha. And it was just kind of like a sobering moment. And we climbed up the stairs above the platform, encountered police. They started checking my press credentials, our bags. And as he was flicking through the pages on my passport, a missile hit the city only about 2 kilometers away. A massive explosion, and we ducked down. I remember looking at the windows that had tape across them in an X, and that was the only thing that stopped the windows from shattering. And I ducked down, and I look up, and the cop didn't even flinch. He was just flicking my passport, looking for the entry stamp, like it was another mundane day at work. And that gave me two things. It gave me a realization that, you know, I don't need to be immediately worried for my safety. If he's not moving, I should be okay. And the second thing it made me realize is, despite having been to Mali, West Bank, Nagorno-Karabakh, some other hot zones you could call before in the past to film conflict, I had never been in a war. I was still a war virgin. And what came next was really a baptism of fire in terms of what I caught on my camera and what would feature in my film.
Well, I was going to ask you about Bucha there. And the dreadful aftermath that you would have seen. I mean, tell us what you saw and the effect it had on you.
So I headed down the E40 highway west of Kyiv, which is the E40. It links Lviv to Kyiv. And this is where the Russians got stuck. They tried to push into the city from here, but they were pushed back. And this was maybe 24 hours after the Russians had decided to pull back to Belarus, to the north. We drove down the highway, and wow, it was like, you know, asteroids had fallen from the sky and holes in the ground. So much Russian dead left behind, civilians scattered around the place. The ambulance service in full body armor, you know, collecting the dead and separating them into piles, essentially. The Russian dead on one side, civilians on the other, and, you know, Ukrainian soldiers being pulled out first. So, it was crazy. And I remember at this moment filming, it was very difficult to film all of this because I didn't want to make a snuff film, you know. And I was trying to find a way to show the horror of the war, but being as tactful and respectful as possible. Because after all, even if it's a dead Russian soldier, they're still loved by somebody. They're still somebody's father, brother.
And probably conscripted, you know, in anyway in the first place.
Well, at this point, actually, a lot of the dead Russians that I saw on the highway at this point were mostly ethnic Siberians. There was not many ethnic Russians there. So ethnic minorities from Siberia, a lot of these Russians. But then from there, all the Ukrainian soldiers were a little bit half drunk at this point. They're salvaging munitions from all the positions. They were in high spirits. They realized they had just broken the back of the Russian assault on the capital. From there, headed north into Irpin, saw the media circus that was at the church that was filming the mass graves that were uncovered. But I wanted to kind of get away from that media circus and head a little bit north into the more rural villages closer to the Belarusian border. So I went about 10 kilometers north because there was no press here. And I found one village called Vozel. And people here hadn't seen any press, any aid. They were still living like they were in the Stone Age. No electricity, no gas, no water. They'd just come out of a six-week occupation. And they all wanted to tell me their stories. I was the first press person they'd seen. So they really wanted to get it off their chest. And they were very open in sharing their stories. What they told me, they showed me the graves of people that were, killed. One boy was 14-year-old. He was hiding in the basement of his building with his family and the neighbors, and the Russians threw a smoke grenade into the basement. He thought it was a live grenade. He ran out and he was gunned down by the Russians as he came out. They're the kind of stories that will feature in the film. But I just want to say that another older woman told me that after the Russians left just 12 hours or 24 hours prior, one of the younger Russian soldiers came up to her and to the mother of the dead boy and said, "I'm so sorry for what we did to you here." So, you know, war is hell and there's no good side to it, and there is humanity on both sides, and there's no nice side to it. There's no soft side to it. But they're the type of stories that will feature in the film. But yeah, basically the whole narrative structure of the film is to chronicle the Irish experience in the war in Ukraine and showcase nothing is stronger than the heart of an Irish volunteer. From there, I moved down to Mykolaiv to the beginning of the counter-offensive to take back Kherson. And yeah, this is where I encountered... his name's Vasil. His wife and kids are in Leitrim, and I followed him for a couple of weeks on the front, and basically they started calling me Private Postman because I was delivering letters between Vasil on the front and his wife in Leitrim every time I came back. So every time coming back and forth, I was given the code name Private Postman. I told them I'm the most expensive postman that's ever existed. But yeah, that's it's another Irish story. And then from there, when I went out into Donbass, I encountered two Irish soldiers, ex-Irish soldiers, one I won't name, and the other one, he was working for the Mozart Group, which is a bunch of ex-American Marines, and they're training the Ukrainian army and doing civilian evacuations. And the Irish man, he's from Meath, Dayton Brennan's his name, he was literally touching the front line within 400 metres of Russian positions, Wagner, private military positions. And yeah, just evacuating old women, children, who leaving everything behind. So Dayton really represents, you know, the strength of Irish resolve to help people. Another one would be Andrew Last, ex-Tipperary Fire Service, doing much the same, bringing aid, training the Ukrainian medics, the Ukrainian army medics, and constantly bringing aid. His wife's also Ukrainian. He helped evacuate he went over to Ukraine originally to evacuate his father-in-law from the separatist regions, which he was eventually successful in. So all of these Irish stories kind of like showcase the strength of, you know, the Irish humanitarian experience and show us that despite being so far removed by geography, we are much closer, almost as close to Russian positions than, you know, the Irish people would believe. So if I can be a window for Irish audience into this conflict to understand it in a better way, then I feel like I would have done something of value.
Yeah. What has it left you with?
A realization of how lucky we are.
Yeah.
We're incredibly, incredibly lucky. I mean, I ask people in Ukraine, like, why are you fighting? Why are you doing it? And they would just turn back and say, I'm doing it so my kids don't have to. Because this is, for them, they see this as a generational thing. They don't see this is going to be over anytime soon. So they want to end it now so that their kids, when they grow up, they don't have to. Yeah, so it's left me with the realization that we're incredibly lucky in Ireland. We're incredibly privileged. We have a peaceful society. And, you know, we shouldn't take it for granted.
A lot of people praising you here, but one particular one, Derek is different. He's a different view. Documentary is only looking at the war in Ukraine on one side only. NATO and the US instigated this entire war by supplying Ukraine with weapons. Did they in 2003 or something when they all signed the treaty?
I suppose he would be kind of referring to 2014.
Getting the nuclear stuff out and all that sort of stuff. And
is he referring to the nuclear weapon? Well,
it's instigated the entire war. The word entire.
Well, if you want to talk about Ukraine, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Ukraine was left with about, I don't know how many, there was a lot of nuclear weapons left behind in the Ukrainian silos. And one of the deals that was struck was Ukraine would return all these nuclear weapons to Russia if their national security, the integrity of their national security was guaranteed. And that was one of the original deals. Then you had the revolution in 2014. I will agree with him that, of course, there were foreign provocateurs from America, from the West, from Europe in there, you know, stoking the fire. Of course, it's the reality of geopolitics. If you're stuck... And Ukraine is a victim of its own geography. You cannot be positioned between two major powers, the West and Russia, with two different viewpoints on the world without being pulled back and forth with both sides being invested in it. So I don't disagree that, of course, the Americans, the British, the EU have a vested interest in making sure Russia loses. And so the same could be said for Russia. They're a victim of their geography. Do you think if Ireland completely changed its foreign policy and started adopting a Russian-style worldview and political view, do you think we wouldn't have the same sort of stuff happening here?
Right, okay.
We're victims of our geography.
And think back Nicaragua or something, which might be something back in Central America generally, back in the Reagan time. But anyway, Finn, where can we see?
Well, you can see the trailers. They're already online on YouTube. Forsaken Frontier is the name of the documentary. And my company's production company is called Finhouse Films. So you can find it on YouTube, Instagram, all the socials. So if you want to see the trailers, they're already out.
Okay.
And I hope to have it produced. I'm planning to go back during the summer when the winter is over. The ice thaws and the real fighting begins, and I plan to follow the last stories that I have to capture out there, the last Irish stories, and then have it produced by September, October. So if you want to see the trailers, they're out online, Forsaken Frontier.
Keep in touch, won't you?
Will do. Thanks.
And are you going out again? Are you going out?
End of May, start of June. That's the plan.
Okay.
When the weather gets a bit better.
Keep safe. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
Finn
a bit.
Boylan there, a documentary maker from Bray here in County Wicklow. Morning Show.